Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview with actor, singer, dancer, writer, educator, known to theater, TV, and widescreen audiences as Marie Thomas, known to her many students as Mrs. Foster. As you'll hear in this interview, I've known Marie a very long time. I'm happy to finally be able to interview her and also to promote the fact that her most current gig is as part of the two-person ensemble currently playing at the Goodman Theater in Chicago in Having Our Say, which was directed by Chuck Smith, whose interview I aired last week. And you will hear Marie talk about Chuck and about how she went from a girl who commandeered all her friends to be in a show at 12 to a woman who has appeared in every possible theatrical venue and made a life not only of performing, but of encouraging many, 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 many youngsters to follow in her footsteps, the footsteps of being a completely self-actualized human being. Marie's story is charming, delightful, interesting. So hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice, oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive. From nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources, oh,
welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being the person you really are, not the person you think you have to be, not the person they told you you should be, not even the person you may currently think you are, but the person you really are. It's ironic, but unfortunately, many children experience in their childhoods consequences of being something that doesn't go down well, either with their family of origin, with their peers, with their teacher, with a religious organization. And the consequences of being something that other people find unattractive or ugly or dangerous is too much for most children. And many are able to pretend that whatever it is that everybody didn't want them to be, well, they just aren't it. And many get so good at the pretense that they forget they were ever these things which they are currently in denial for. In my shows, as you will hear me tell Marie, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art, because when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be who you really are. And in Marie, we have a woman who knew from the beginning, held on with both hands, and lived a life completely the life she was meant to live. So, here now is the very much herself, Marie Thomas Foster. I'm here with Marie Thomas, and I'm explaining to Marie that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And I know that the art to which you have given your life, and more times than not made your living, is the art of acting, the art of theater. Would you say that's correct?
I think so, in many different ways.
I only have one question.
Yeah.
And that is, do you remember the very first moment in your life when acting, play acting, telling stories, any of that attracted you, called you, seemed interesting?
I think always. I used to gather up people in my neighborhood, and they used to run from me sometimes and tell them they had to rehearse because we would have the show. The show would come at the end of the summer, like August.
Well, how old were you then?
I was probably about 12, mm-hmm. You know.
And what was the show?
We would do singing and dancing. And my good friend Carol Jacks, whose family had a three-story house, but the bottom floor was a basement. And that was the perfect place to do our shows, because we get these white sheets, and from one pole to the next, we'd strap them up. And then we'd have costumes that we had accumulated as a result of taking dance at the local Y. And
minute. No, back up. Mm-hmm. So you were taking dance already.
Yeah.
So when did that start?
Oh, my goodness. Let me think. I always wanted to go to a private dance school, but my mother couldn't afford it. So the Y was giving dance lessons. So I guess around 10, 11, something like that. And so every year they had a recital. And, of course, we had to get costumes. Mm-hmm. And then my mother would make them, or somebody would make them, and we'd have a dance recital. So we always had these costumes that we could put on. As a matter of fact, I remember one, Carol and I did an Indian dance, the Indian Love Call. Mm-hmm. And I even have that picture at home. My sister sent it to me. She found it. And, I'll be calling you. And we'd make up this choreography, but we didn't necessarily rehearse all the time, because she knew exactly if I went this way, she knew what I was going to do, and vice versa. So we could always make up these dances as we went along. And we did a lot of that. We did a lot of entertaining at people's teas and things like that. So
you started right out as a girl performing.
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. So were you thinking, this is what I want to do with my life?
Well, I wasn't sure. I come from a family of school teachers. Mm-hmm. So, and I come from the South, Atlanta, Georgia. So there wasn't all that opportunity in my face. Well, I started majoring in theater when I went to college. And it was the first time they had put a major of theater. They called it speech and drama. So that would please the academicians, I suspect. It was mostly theater. And so for that 4 years' time, I majored in it, and my mother kept saying, well, when are you going to do your student teaching? I said, okay, not anytime soon, probably next year.
So she thought you were...
Well, she said that she was hoping, you know, that I would want a minor in education, because you could do that, but I minored in English instead. Long story short, I did it purposely, because I did not want to stay in Atlanta and I did not want to be a school teacher. Because I come from a line of school teachers, I would have had a diploma in one hand and a job in the other.
Yeah.
So when I graduated, what was I going to do? So I got on a train with a girlfriend of mine, and we went to D.C. just to sort of hang out. I had also sent away to see if I could find a job in New York for the summer. And by the time I got to D.C., that job came forth. I mean, it wasn't $1 million job, $298 more than anything.
So are you saying this is after you graduated?
And this is when I graduated from Spelman College in Atlanta. And I got on the bus from D.C. to New York, and I got settled with friends. And then eventually I went to my little $2 job. And I worked there for the whole summer, and then I auditioned for American Theater Wing, because the people in Atlanta knew that I wanted to go on in theater, so they contacted American Theater Wing, and I had an audition with this woman named Helen Menken. who was formerly a wife of Humphrey Bogart, we found out much later, maybe the first wife or something like that. So I did these auditions and I got in, and that was the beginning of my mother saying, okay, I guess you can stay, because she was very concerned about how I was going to make a living. At that time, there was a restaurant in New York called 22 West, which was in the Lenox Terrace area, and I worked as a cashier. My mother said, you're going to work as a cashier? You can't, you're terrible in math. I said, no, this is the way you do it. You know, you give you the money, you count backwards as to what they're. And so that was very productive, because then I could eat at the restaurant.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. So I was in school from 2 to 6. I would go uptown to 135th Street, and I'd get perched up on my little... No, I'd eat first. And the owner said, my God, you're eating enough for two people. I said, well, I have a good appetite. So I would eat first. And then I would, work from 7 to 10, and then I'd go to my room that I rented from a lady at 150th Street. It's called the Dunbar Apartments, named after Paul Lawrence Dunbar, the poet. And I rented a room for $50 a month. Well, when my mother found out I had a job, she didn't need to send me any more money, so I really was poor. But I paid my rent, and I continued through the year, and I finished the year at American Theater Wing. And then I really had to go to work somewhere. And at that time, you could go into an employment agency in New York. I think it was like on Broadway and 50-something Street you'd go in. And I applied for a job, and I got this job at in Bed-Stuy at the Stuyvesant Community Center. Well, of course, I worked at the Y when I was a kid, so I could think of all kinds of projects and programs to do. And that's what I proceeded to do. I even created a dance club. And we performed outside for all the project, the whole project.
And yet so again, then, right?
Yes, I'm still doing it. Same thing. Anyway, I worked there for a year, and the director liked my work very much. I said, but you know what? I can't do this all the time. I had an opportunity to do a play, and I went to him and I said, I've been asked to perform, and I don't know how I'm going to do it. I said, because I work from 10 to 6 one day, and then 2 to 10. So when I talked to the people who had offered the job, they said, well, this is a showcase, so we have to work around people's, schedules. So the director said, I think you should take it. I think we'll work it out, because I think that'll be a good experience for the young teenagers that I was working with. And sure enough, they all came. They had this bouquet of flowers. Aww. That they bought. I never not thought for one minute that I would not be an actress. Even though there were times when it looked like, nothing was happening. I saw myself doing it. Even though I was on the subway from Harlem to Bed-Stuy, all over Midtown Manhattan, I just still saw it. So I think so much of what I say to my kids now, I run a workshop with children. I said, if you can conceive it and believe it, then you can achieve it. Mm-hmm. That's part of our motto. So I think
So what happened after the showcase?
Well, after the showcase, I had met this wonderful man who had recommended me for the job, because he and I were in a company together, and he never said two words to me, but he was always staring for some strange reason, and that gentleman became my husband. So we got married, and he was very supportive, because he was also in the production end of business, which was very happy and healthy for us both, that he wasn't trying to still pursue, an acting career. So at some point... I have to talk about you. Can I talk about you?
Oh, yeah, it's okay.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, before I did all of that, before I got married, of course, I was still seeking out employment, and I ended up in this place called Forest Neighborhood House. And there sat on the other side of the desk was this young woman who was very vibrant. We had a nice conversation, and then she hired me to work in her playhouse, and I worked with younger children. And then I was going somewhere. She said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to my voice class. Where is that? She said. I said, it's downtown at so-and-so-and-so. Next thing I know, she was going with me to my voice class. And next thing I know, she got up and played the piano and sang like Barbra Streisand. And I said, well, look at that. Life is so you just have to relax, let it happen, let it go. And you and I became very good friends.
Yes, we did.
Yes.
A long time ago.
Yeah, oh God, it's been a long time.
I was so impressed.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was. I mean, I didn't know you in that context. Mm-hmm. You were teaching dance to these kids in the neighborhood house, right?
Yeah.
But you got up there and you sparkled. I mean, it was wonderful.
Well, so did you, my dear.
Well, thank you very much.
I got married And then my son was born, and we moved to New Jersey. I started working at Lincoln Center in a show called The Duplex by a gentleman named Ed Bullins. And I did that for 2 months, and then the next job I had was on Broadway in Don't Bother Me, I Can't Cope. I had auditioned for The Doctors, which is a daytime soap opera, and I played a singer who had lost her voice, who had to go back to nursing because her old boyfriend came to seek her out, and he had a wounded shoulder, and he wanted to be a surgeon, and his friends knew he was in love with me because he was playing my record, and anyway, they found me in New York. Anyway, we got back together. I think that lasted almost 2.5 years. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I just felt kind of, you know, what do I do now? Do I wait for another acting job? And people were always offering acting jobs, but weren't paying enough money. Mm-hmm. I decided to start my children's theater. That's been going on for 40 years now.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, right. But it just grew. It just went from teaching acting to teaching dance, several kinds of dance, to voice, to creative writing, to servicing somewhere over almost 200 and something children a year. That you think as an actor, this is all you have to do all the time. And I never thought that way. I really wanted to have a variety in my life, and I wanted to be able to be home to raise my children. Oh, I went to City College to teach as well.
Right, yeah. You want to talk about that?
Yes, that was... It was so interesting because at a certain age in my life, I'm thinking, God, I would rather have something that I was dependable. And I'd always been an adjunct at City College in New York in teaching acting. And then one of the professors recommended me for the full-time position that was coming up. Well, I must say, I was very sad about getting it.
And a teacher after all.
I know.
Mommy writes.
Yes. I was so sad. I thought, oh, no. I'm going to be somewhere like, you know, but it was in the college, it was teaching theater, it was in the BFA mm-hmm. program, and it was these young people needed my advice mm-hmm. And my encouragement, because everybody discourages anybody that goes yeah. into this.
Well, business. And your expertise, yeah. you were really there. Right.
So I was there for a good 12 and a half years. Tenured professors were retrenched. That was a lovely word.
Oh, God.
I took that word and made a play out of it. I did a final show, which I wrote, which had to do with all of the political stuff that was going on in the college. And then I left with, you know, bells on, because I knew this is another time now. And I had a daughter at that point, and my son was in high school. That L.A. wasn't my thing. Theater was mine. And I don't like to use the word control, but at least I have some sense of control, I guess.
Right. Being influence
over what
right.
I'm doing.
Yes.
Whereas opposed, you know, you're working at television, the angle may be here, they may cut that, and you just don't know, you know, what's right. going on. And I've always loved being on stage. I did a play called Knock Me a Kid with Chuck Smith. I wasn't about to even do that, because you see, I was just footloose and fancy free, and I didn't have to worry about anything. Everybody's gone. And a wonderful gentleman in New York who was a casting person had sent me the information about this play. So I said, oh, this ought to be a really interesting play. Well, I didn't think any more about it. And I was at the movies, and I came back, and I got a voicemail, and I got a text. And so finally, I called the gentleman. I said, what in the world is this? He said, I sent this to you. I said, you did? He said, yes. We're having callbacks. I said, you're having callbacks? So I said, wait a minute. Send it to me again. Let me go look at the script. Well, I always look for something that really excites me and turns me on. And the very last speech was the thing that took me. I thought, wow, this is really great. I would be playing the part of Nina Du Bois, the wife of W.E.B. Du Bois. And also, she had had some nervous breakdowns of things that happened. It gave me, you know, something to play. So I called them back, and I said, yes. I said, I'll come in for the callbacks. So I go in, and I read it, and we did that production four different times. And that was the last time I was really on stage. Summer before last, I did a short film called Sweet Dreams Mama, and I played the woman with the Alzheimer's. I will be leaving on April the 9th to go to Chicago to work with Chuck again, but doing Having Now Say, which mm-hmm. is the play about these two ladies, over 100.
Right.
And they are talking about their lives when they grew up in the South at St. Augustine Parish in North Carolina. It was a book adapted by Emily Mann. This is a play that's kind of followed me. I've auditioned for it. I auditioned for understudy when it was originally done. And then when Emily was doing it again, I auditioned again. And then a girlfriend of mine just did it 2 years ago, and they weren't sure if one of the girls who lived in Mexico was going to be able to come to do it. And they called and asked if I thought I went away. At that time, I didn't. I didn't say no, but I was very happy that the young lady's visa was okay. They decided to do it at the Goodman, and now I can talk about it because I've signed a contract. Show opens May the 14th, I think, and runs through June the 10th. They called and talked to me about it. I was a little hesitant. A theater workshop. This is my baby, and I think, can I do this? the time when I was in Connecticut doing King Lear, Joe was alive then, so things were always going to be okay.
Right, right.
But
right no, now, but you know, you have to.
Well, this is what everybody.
And it's the truth. I love you, and I can see that you are still who you always were, but you aren't always going to be this person.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
You said none of us is going backwards.
Yeah,
the theater workshop is going to survive you, and so the sooner that they have to dance on their own, you know, the better. So this is a perfect timing.
Yeah. Because I've passed up a lot of jobs. And not regretfully so, because I know the nature of our business, and if you want something that's going to be in your life steady, then you have to create that, because this is not the case with our business. Job, you can be on Broadway for 10 years and then it's over.
Yeah,
you got to find some more work. But I didn't mind that, because I never wanted to do anything all the time anyway. I have never been a good 9-to-5-er. Fortunately, I never knew how to type well. I've learned how to use a computer because I had to, so I type pretty good now. But never knew that, you know, when I graduated from high school, people took typing, I took cooking or something, home economics,
because
I was not about to go be a secretary, you know, not that there's anything wrong with that. And when I got to New York, I said, well, what the heck can I do here, you know, and because I always worked with kids, social work in the agencies was a good thing to do.
You know, what you have always done is work.
Yes.
That is what you have always done.
Yes, that's true.
Okay, so I have one more question. Having given an entire life to this work, is there anything you would say about what that's like?
All of a sudden, you're at a certain time and age in your life, you wonder, what happened? But I knew along the way not to have any regrets. If that meant working 24/7, if that meant working every day of the week, do it. And if you wanted to have children, you knew the sacrifices you had to make in relationship to that. And so I didn't give up anything necessarily. You know, people have problems in their lives and you try to work through them. But I've always had a very forward-looking attitude about everything. I never look back at stuff unless it's to be happy about it. One day I realized, I said, you know, you have all of this material in this box. Why don't you put things up on the wall so that you see that you've done something when you walk in the room? And sure enough, that really helped me just continue to move forward. Even when I had personal issues and I had to straighten those out, I had to stand on my 2 feet and I said, okay, this is what I need to do. I say my Buddhist training is I will not begrudge my own life. So if things around me are trying to begrudge my life, you got to go. You know? So, and then that doesn't mean I'm being selfish, I'm being self-indulgent. That means I'm being realistic about who I am, what I'm all about. We have this whole saying, people treat us a certain kind of way. And we say, that person must not know who I am. They better ask somebody. So we all laugh when we go into those encounters. Oh, you better ask somebody. You know. Anyway, but that's kind of the way I look at life. I'm pretty okay.
You're more than pretty okay. No. The life you chose was not an easy life. And you were proactive in your life, always. And as a result, what you have is a terrific body of work, both on the stage and 40 years of bringing these kids, this glorious gift.
They've been my gift, ways, because the things that I had to do, had to learn, had to fix. And then, of course, my husband was doing all the managerial stuff, so when he passed, I had to do all the managerial stuff. So I've learned how to do that pretty well. And, I don't like it, but I've learned how to do it. And I always feel if there's something I've got to do. It's just like I didn't know how to type, and then, you know, I had to learn how to use a computer. Mm-hmm. My son said, you really want this? I said, yes, because I'm going to learn how to use this thing. And then there are things when I curse, why did I buy this thing? But I'm glad that I have it because, you see, it keeps my mind from atrophying. And then sometimes I do things by accident. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem with that is I don't know what I did.
But it seems to me that what you're saying is what you've been saying all along, which is that whatever it is you have to do, you do it.
Yeah.
You know?
I come from that place.
Yeah.
You know, my family was like.
I was going to say, even though they didn't produce a teacher, but they did.
Yes, they did.
In the end.
And I think actors are teachers. Really,
yes, I do.
If they understand what they're doing most of the time. It's what Shakespeare says, hold the mirror up to nature. So you are teaching when you are performing all. And I think the thing with performing for me is it's exhausting. 8 shows a week, and the Goodman is going to have a lot of shows on the weekends. Mm-hmm. So I said, oh, Lord. But anyway, 8 shows a week is a
challenge,
physical challenge. Mm-hmm. I learned that when I was doing Broadway. I got sick. I came on stage, and I hardly had any voice, but I forced myself through. And then I didn't know what had happened to me, and it was because I was exhausted. And I had gone to the doctor to talk about that, and without thinking, he gave me this medication to help, and they were tranquilizers. I didn't realize that. And then, of course, I took one just before I went into the theater so I could relax, and I was too relaxed. I'm trying this hard. I said, what the heck? I took those things and threw them in the trash. And to this day, I take nothing. It's like, go on stage. It was awful. Just awful. You know, you live and you learn.
Well, that's a great place to stop. This is wonderful. Thank you so much, Marie.
Oh, Lynn, thank you.
I hope that in listening to Marie, you have heard what I hear, have always heard from Marie, and that is the powerful sense that she is who she is, and she will not be diverted from that. Her entire family made up of teachers, but Marie knew instinctively that that kind of teacher was not for her. And as she says, and we smiled over the fact that she wound up teaching anyway, not only actually teaching on the college level, not only actually teaching in the theater workshop, but teaching from the stage. As always, I hope you heard something in this show. I hope you got something from this show. As always, I hope you got something from this show that you can use, something that intrigued you, something that you learned that you didn't know, something that inspired you, something that will get you out to Chicago to see Marie in Having Our Say, and something that will bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station, and as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older, my hair is turning gray, oh, you say my face and figure have both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring, I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly, well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight. No, no, we will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper, going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you